Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Trouble began, and not for the first time, with an apple. There was a bag of them on Granny Weatherwax's bleached and spotless table. Red and round, shiny and fruity. If they'd known the future, they should have ticked like bombs.
"Keep the lot. Old Hopcroft said I could have as many as I wanted," said Nanny Ogg. She gave her sister witch a sidelong glance. "Tasty, a bit wrinkled, but a damn good keeper."
"He named an apple after you," said Granny. Each word was an acid drop on the air.
"'Cause of my rosy cheeks," said Nanny Ogg. "Anna cured his leg for him after he fell off that ladder last year, and I made him up some jollop for his bald head."
"It didn't work, though," said Granny. "That wig he wears, that's a terrible thing to see on a man still alive."
"But he was pleased I took an interest."
Granny Weatherwax didn't take her eyes off the bag. Fruit and vegetables grew famously in the mountains, hot summers and cold winters. Percy Hopcroft was the premier grower and definitely a keen man when it came to sexual antics among the horticulture with a camel hair brush.
Well, hello.
Hello.
As it's meant to, that last sentence took me by surprise. Sexual antics, what? But on rereading, what it means is this: Percy Hopcroft is artificially cross-pollinating plants in his garden. Bees in the wind would be transferring pollen in nature to the reproductive parts in the center of the plant, but Percy is doing it in the garden with a camel hair brush.
Of course.
Like a very sensual game of Clue.
That was the opening to Terry Pratchett's The Sea and Little Fishes. We're continuing our fantasy month with this tale about witches.
And we're having our first look at the work of Terry Pratchett. But first, there's another mystery to solve. Who was that reader?
Our reader is Rachel Lackey. She's rad and she's a witch as well. I don't know if you knew this.
No, I didn't know that. What sort of witchery does she do?
She has cast a spell upon me.
Aw, you're happy about that, right?
Please do.
It's good.
It is good.
Like the good witches in this story. One thing I do know is that Rachel is the eponymous host of Rachel Watches Star Trek, which means her name's in the title, eponymous. Yeah. What are you guys covering right now on the show?
Right now we're in the fifth season of Star Trek The Next Generation. We just started. We finished up with Redemption, where Worf, spoiler alert for a show that's over 20 years old, there's a Klingon Civil War and Worf is at the center of it. So we're covering those fun episodes. Really,
that's
great.
When the show was really good, right? It was really cooking in those seasons. Mm-hmm. Well, we're about to take a step into a larger world by covering Mr. Terry Pratchett. His work has come up a lot over the years.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of our listeners are big fans. In fact, we did a story called The Drone, episode 501, which was a werebee story. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
And we got a comment from Shauna Carter that said, "The last section of The Drone reminded me a bit of Granny Weatherwax from Terry Pratchett's Discworld series, who keeps bees and occasionally performs a kind of astral projection called borrowing, where her consciousness leaves her body and travels as a bee swarm."
Whoa.
Which is really cool. And that's a character from this very short story.
Uh-huh.
It's too bad I know that reading this now, because she does not use that power in the story. It made me wish she did. Now, you were the one that selected the story. What, do you remember why?
Folks just said really nice things about it. They really liked it. It's got good reviews. It's a bit longer, so we're going to break this up into two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that this has made me fall in love with Terry Pratchett.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I've only ever read Good Omens, which was his collaboration with Neil Gaiman that was made into that television show. I liked that a lot, but you know, who knows who wrote what. We were talking about not having read Pratchett on a bonus episode, and Richard Meyer Art left this comment on that episode. "I can't deny that I'm more than a little jealous that you guys have all of Terry Pratchett's books to look forward to. It reminds me of the time Chad hadn't read The Shadow Out of Time until he needed to do so for the podcast. I've read all of Pratchett's books multiple times, but there will never be any new Pratchett to read. He had his effing hard drive run over by a steamroller after he died." And then he left the link to that article. I looked it up. It's on the BBC. It's true.
Wow.
He didn't want anybody to finish his fragments on his computer, so he had a steamroller. He was in his will. They did it. They destroyed the hard drive.
So dramatic.
There won't be any new Pratchett, just as there will probably never be any new Lovecraft unless someone discovers some letters in their attic.
Sure.
I'm sure you're getting lots of recommendations on which Pratchett stories to cover. My two cents, avoid the first two Discworld novels as you would Lovecraft's Juvenalia.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting, because I almost picked up The Color of Magic the other day. For Discworld, start with a novel near the middle of the series in the 2000s, written in the 2000s. Apart from Discworld, Nation is a wonderful novel, and the Long Earth series is a great sci-fi series, especially the first one, which starts in Madison, Wisconsin.
That's where you are.
That's where I'm at. I might have to check that out. I did, in fact, on learning that the story was in the Discworld universe, attempt to figure out just where in the series this short story would happen.
Oh, okay.
Chronologically, mm-hmm. I went to the reading order page at DiscworldEmporium.com. There are 41 novels.
What?
In this series. 41 that he wrote over the years.
That yeah, can't be right. I don't,
it's, dude, 41 novels. Not including companion books and that sort of thing, and these types of short stories. I don't think I understood the breadth of this series. Clearly, you didn't either.
I didn't. I thought there were like 5 or 6.
Oh, no, man.
Oh,
41
wow.
that he wrote over 35, 37 years. Yeah. We're going to summarize each and every one of those novels today. So why don't we just do a very brief bio?
Yeah. Sir Terence David John Pratchett was born in 1948 in Buckinghamshire, England, but he grew up in Somerset. He had his first published story in 1962.
Wow, that's an early start.
And it was in 1968 he got his first novel published, The Carpet People, which he illustrated himself. His first Discworld book, the fantasy setting he created, came out in 1983 with the book The Color of Magic, which you spoke about.
Yeah.
His fourth Discworld book, Mort, came out in 1987, and by the 90s, he was one of the UK's best-selling authors.
Yeah, he owned that decade. He wrote an average of 2 books a year, which I guess is how you get to 41 in one series.
Wow.
He received the World Fantasy Award for Life Achievement in 2010.
Then in 2007, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He really wanted people to keep things cheerful. He said, we are taking it fairly philosophical down here and possibly with a mild optimism. He did a lot of charity work and donated a lot of money to Alzheimer research, but pretty much everyone's account of him is that he was one hell of a guy. And he passed in 2015. Some cool stuff about him, when people started using personal computers, he was on it pretty fast. He was one of the first authors to have an online presence and communicate with his fans. In 1995, he raised concerns about misinformation online with Bill Gates. Gates went the other way with it. He didn't think that Pratchett was right, because he believed, it says here, online authorities would index and check facts and sources in a much more sophisticated way than in print.
If there's one word to describe online authorities, sophisticated ain't it. Pratchett was a video game fan as well, not a common characteristic of authors on this show.
No.
In a 2015 interview, he described The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion as his favorite game.
Oh, yeah. I hear great things about the Elder Scrolls games. Yeah. Well, this story, The Sea and Little Fishes, was first published in Legends, Short Novels by Masters of Modern Fantasy in 1998, an anthology that had stories by Ursula K. Le Guin, George R.R. Martin, Stephen King, and then many others that, you know, I could just read them all and you would know who I was talking about. It's a pretty powerful book. Legends.
Legends, colon.
This story takes place in the fantasy setting of Discworld, and there is so much about Discworld that I couldn't even begin to get into it, really.
Well, there's 41 novels. And in my head, because we had read Zelazny recently, I conflated Discworld with Chronicles of Amber.
Yeah.
Going into this, I thought it was, oh, this is the fantasy dimension. And I had to sort of disabuse myself of that. I read up a little on Discworld and figured out, oh, it's one place and the genre of the setting is comic fantasy.
Well, the world itself is vast. It's called Discworld because the whole world is a disc that sits on the back of 4 elephants, which in turn stand on the shell of a giant sea turtle flying through space. Which is pretty funny in and of itself.
I mean, it's just as absurd as the universe really is. If that was the universe you were born into, you'd go, yeah, giant sea turtle. That's how it works.
What I love too about it is, like, why do you need those elephants in the middle there?
Yeah, what's up with the elephant intermediaries?
Yeah, you need 4 of them too. Why couldn't you just have one big elephant? Why is it 4? Why are they there at all? I just love it.
Well, there's a mechanical reason, I reckon, because they kind of even out, they balance the disc. If it just sat on top of the turtle, it would be kind of lopsided or spin, or it might fall off. I just cracked it.
In this world, there are witches and wizards and trolls and all types of other fantastical stuff.
Each novel is a standalone novel as well. It's not like a saga where each story depends on the next. In fact, when you go to the reading order, they have it sorted different ways. So if you just want to read 5 books, you can just follow these characters, for example. Mm. It did tickle that comic book collector part of my brain, though, looking at that reading order list. It made me want to go chronologically through all 41 of them. But you know what? Let's talk about this story. Like you say, it's a little longer, so we'll break it into 2 parts. And then at the end of this, we can decide, do I read all 41?
Yeah.
What's the story all about?
Well, it begins with 2 witches having a conversation, Granny Esmeralda Esme Weatherwax. And that's the first time that I realized Esme was short for Esmeralda. I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that because I know lots of kids. It's a very popular name right now named Esme. But I don't know if even their parents know that Esme is an abbreviation of Esmeralda.
You're going to be the one to tell him.
You bet your ass. Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Gaitha Og. They're both part of the Lankra Coven.
Does it say the Lankra Coven in the story, or did you look that up?
I looked that up.
Now, this story also stands alone, by the way. Discworld is referenced when Nanny's looking out over the horizon at one point in terms of the setting. But as part of the Discworld novel chronology, I did read it falls somewhere between Carpe Jugulum and A Hat Full of Sky. Those two novels. Would you walk into the show if those two bands were on the bill? I don't think so. It sounds like it would be an Insane Clown Posse cover band paired with a Spin Doctors cover band. Oh, that would be the worst show ever. Anyhow, Granny Weatherwax, who has bee powers, which won't be referenced in this story, is chilling with her sister witch, Nanny Og.
They're having a conversation at Granny Weatherwax's place about this guy, Farmer Hopcroft. And he has named a type of apple that he's bred after Nanny Og. Og apples, I assume that's what they're called. Because we have all different types of apples, you know, pink ladies and Brayburn and
brave soldiers and tongue lashers.
Witches are all known in this world, and they seem very respected in their communities. They help people, they're healers, they give good advice, and they have magic powers. Nanny Og made a wig for Farmer Hopcroft, and he's very appreciative, even though Granny Weatherwax says it looks terrible.
That line is comedy genius. That wig he wears, that's a terrible thing to see on a man still alive.
That made me laugh out loud.
Me too. I was worried that this was going to be sort of Douglas Adams light or something. I don't know why I thought that. That it would be more cutesy and clever.
Yeah.
That line would slay in a film or sitcom. It's just great.
It's funny. Nanny Og chides her and asks if she's jealous that she doesn't have an apple named after her. But Granny scoffs and Nanny Og knows, you know, it's getting under her skin a little bit. Now, Pratchett leans into myths, and these ladies are full-on, pointed, hat-wearing, black-clad witches, but they are a force of good in the setting. And as they talk, we discover that there's this festival coming up, and as part of it, there is a witch trial. When I hear, witch trial, I'm like, that doesn't sound good, but no. This is a contest of magic that will be going on. So Granny Weatherwax has handily won over the last few years, and she's very confident that she's going to win again.
They've reclaimed witch trials.
Now, Nanny Og knows that Granny will win and doesn't seem too bothered about it. She respects Granny. She knows that she's great at magic, maybe the best that she's ever seen, the best of a generation.
Simply the best.
So Nanny Og invites her over for Sunday dinner, but when Granny hears it's pork with applesauce, she's out.
The way that Granny gets her guests to leave is hilarious. You know, like you say, she finds out it's pork with applesauce and she goes, no, I'm not coming over to dinner. And then there was a creaking behind Nanny. The door had swung open. Someone who wasn't a witch would have rationalized this, would have said that, of course, it was only the wind. And Nanny Og was quite prepared to go along with this, but would have added, why was it only the wind? And how come the wind had managed to lift the latch? So she just did, Granny just did the magical equivalent of get the f*** out of my house.
So after she leaves, Nanny Og knows that she's being petty about the apple thing, but it's a little game that she plays with Granny to keep her busy. Their little part of the world is about 10 square miles, and somebody as clever and as powerful as Granny should always be kept busy.
Yeah, she says the trouble with being a witch was you got stuck out here in the country, and I don't know quite what that's about. Maybe the books shed more light on it, but as witches, they need to be out there rather than in the city. I don't know. Nanny likes it out here in the country. The only trouble she's ever had was not enough men live out here. It's hinted at that she's got a history. She's a bit of a Blanche Devereaux from the Golden Girls. She's the player, likes the dudes, but otherwise she's not really into other places except to visit.
Yeah.
Interesting new drinks and the grub was fun, but foreign parts is where you went to do what might need to be done. And then you came back here, a place that was real. Nanny Og was happy in small places. I don't know why I'm reading her as Blanche Devereaux now, but that's who she is in my mind.
That's good.
But Esme Weatherwax needed more than this little kingdom could contain. She was the other kind of witch. And Nanny saw it as her job to stop Granny Weatherwax getting bored. The business with the apples was petty enough, a spiteful little triumph when you got down to it. But Esme needed something to make every day worthwhile, and if it had to be anger and jealousy, then so be it. Granny would now scheme for some little victory, some tiny humiliation that only the two of them would ever know about, and that'd be that. Nanny was confident that she could deal with her friend in a bad mood, but not when she was bored. A witch who is bored might do anything.
So I love that.
Yeah.
Good characters here. There's so much of it that they just seem like real people, and I'm already interested in pulled into this world. And this story, like you said, it stands on its own. You don't need to read any of the Discworld stuff at all to appreciate the story, because I haven't.
I've only read
this story. I've just read the story and I love it.
Yeah.
So the trials are coming up, and that is exactly the kind of thing to keep Granny from getting bored. Nanny Ogg, she loves them too. It's a day out, and they always have this great big bonfire, which is lots of fun.
That little suite of scenes concludes with Granny sitting in her kitchen staring at the apple bag, which then rots. It literally withers under her gaze. So we know that the thing did actually bother her, but we don't know how she's going to react.
Now, sometime later, Nanny Ogg gets a knock at the door. It's three witches that she knows well, part of her coven, I assume. Gammer Beavis, who Nanny Ogg likes. She talks a lot, but she does good work, and she knows her stuff. Then there's Old Mother Dismas, who, because of a detached retina in her second sight, is out of sync with time. And it's not just her perception of it, but actually out of sync. Her knock at the door might be heard an hour before she got there, and her footsteps on the ground hours later. So she's a bit off, but she's still very sweet.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the rose.
She's kind of... kind of the rose. Lastly, there's Lettice Earwig. Not a bad woman, but a wealthy woman who had married a wizard. She is nice enough, but that isn't really her issue.
The trouble was that she would do you a good turn for your own good, even if a good turn wasn't what was good for you. You ended up mentally turned the other way, and that wasn't good. That sentence was a tough one to puzzle out. What did that mean to you?
I think that she would do something that she thought was good for you, but wasn't actually good for you.
Right.
Or was good for you, and that, you know, I don't know.
I think she's a busybody. Like, she's decided what's good for you.
Yes.
And she doesn't know whether you really want her to or not.
Right. Yes, that's it. So they start off with niceties, but then get to the point very quick. They're the committee for the trials, and, well, there's a lot of interest this year. Lots of new girls are participating. It's going to be a big, huge event. Nanny Ogg consents there's a big butt coming.
We know this because she says, this little chat has got a big butt coming up, I can tell.
Lettice says that they are there because of Granny Weatherwax. They're hoping that Nanny Ogg can persuade her not to participate this year. She always wins, and it's discouraging to all the new girls getting involved, and everybody else for that matter.
Lettice says, in other types of competition, one is normally only allowed to win for 3 years in a row, and then one takes a back seat for a while. She doesn't say what competitions those are.
No, she doesn't.
I feel like she's making that up.
And Nanny Ogg points out that witching is different. So what if she always wins? Nanny Ogg can see that the other two witches aren't really comfortable with being here and asking her to do this, but they're still going along with it.
Yeah.
And Nanny Ogg can see what's going on.
So that was how it was going. It was the same in just about every trade. Sooner or later, someone decided it needed organizing. And the one thing you could be sure of was that the organizers weren't going to be the people who, by general acknowledgement, were at the top of their craft. They were working too hard. To be fair, it generally wasn't done by the worst, neither. They were working hard, too. They had to. No, it was done by the ones who had just enough time and inclination to scurry and bustle. And to be fair, again, the world needed people who scurried and bustled. You just didn't have to like them very much.
Totally
get what he's saying.
Yep. It's great stuff. Nanny Ogg says that Granny Weatherwax works hard on her magic, and that's why she's so good. Lettice tells her that they were hoping Nanny Ogg would ask Granny Weatherwax not to participate. Tell you what, she said. You can tell her tomorrow, and I'll come with you to hold her back.
Nanny is awesome. She doesn't come their way at all. And I, you know, on the one side, you can, as you say, those two witches don't, you know, they're going along with it because Lettice is leading them into this. They're being led.
Mm-hmm.
And Nanny can't be led, even though this is suggested to her. Why don't you break the news to her? No, you guys do it. I'll stand and watch. This whole thing reminded me of, in the 80s, The Cosby Show was a really dominant sitcom in the U.S., and it won Best Show at the Emmys every year, year after year. Mm-hmm. And so one year, Cosby pulled it from consideration. Give these other shows a chance. And I remember the adults thinking that was so arrogant. You know, it did not do what he wanted it to do.
Right.
It made people mad. Let us beat you.
Yeah.
What you're really doing is resting on your laurels. You know, you're pulling away so that you can't be beaten.
Yeah.
People might think they want that, but they don't really, because now you haven't cracked the bounds of whatever your profession is.
Sure.
What do you think about somebody dominant withdrawing from a competition?
Do you think
that's a good idea?
No. Most people that compete, you know, if you've got, 20 competitors or in the Olympics, how many people from each country are participating in those?
Right.
There's only one winner. So all those people probably have a pretty good idea that how they're going to do before they get involved. And they still do it.
Right.
Because it's the competition. That's what they want to do. They want to try. They want to see what they can do. From people that are Olympians that I've heard talking about it, it's not really about winning. It's just about doing.
Have you been spying on Olympians again?
creeping and peeping.
Well, you know, that's like Ken Jennings or somebody who wins on Jeopardy day after day after day after day after day. You do start to think, should they just retire this person because it's getting boring? But hopefully you push the bounds of whatever that particular discipline is so that somebody will eventually come along and fell that champion. Yeah. There's a Kurt Vonnegut story. There's a little bit like this called Harrison Bergeron, which I thought about covering the same month that we did Millennium. I keep wanting to call it Chameleonaire, Millennium. But then I decided not to because even though it's funny, it's just a little short and to the point. But that's about a world where people are weighed down so that everybody's the same. You know, if you run too fast, they make you wear weights. If you're too handsome, they make you wear a mask so that everybody can kind of be the same. And it's that same theme that was in, say, like Pixar's The Incredibles. When you make everybody the same, you know, do you remove what's special about people when you try to make everybody the same when you try to make things fair?
Right.
I think it's a little simple-minded, but I think a little of that's going on thematically in this story.
Speaking of Vonnegut, I still want to cover Slaughterhouse-Five on the show at some point.
Yes, I think that would be a much better way into his world rather than Harrison Bergeron, which comes off as kind of just crabby.
Now, the next day, they go over to Granny Weatherwax's place. Granny is not keen on this whole committee thing. We didn't used to need a committee. The news just got around, and we all turned up. Then suddenly, there's folks arranging things. So they try to butter her up a bit.
There's such a lot of interest in the trials this year, Mistress Weatherwax.
It's such a good route to empowerment for young women, don't you think? Granny interrupts to point out that her hat, her witch's hat, was made by a tailor. And it's got fancy pins and brooches in it.
Yeah, Letizia's stuff is all really nice. She leans into her hard for having all that wizard money. Earlier in the story, it says her husband's a retired wizard with a suspicious amount of gold, which is just a real funny side character who's not in the story. That means that they're going, I know how much a wizard should be making, and that's too much. That wizard was on the take. He's got a dragon's body on him that he hasn't fessed up to. There's a hoard. No. Something's going on. Did he pay taxes on that hoard?
Letizia asks Granny if she thinks it's unfair to other people that she wins every year. No, I'm better than them, Granny's response.
What we were hoping to persuade you to do, Esme, is to accept an emeritus position. You would perhaps make a nice little speech of encouragement, present the award, and possibly even be one of the judges.
Granny is like, oh, they're judges now? We never had judges. Everyone just used to know who'd won.
I think if Nanny is Blanche, then Granny is definitely Dorothy. Definitely Bea Arthur. We never had judges. I can just hear her saying these things.
Yeah, or maybe even Sophia.
Perhaps.
I could see a Sophia or Dorothy, I'm not sure.
Ah, yeah, perhaps.
Granny asks if there are going to be little flags, you know, bunting. Is there going to be a big bonfire? Sure, yeah. And Granny is being surprisingly calm about all this, which is frightening in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Earwig lays it out here. Times are changing, you know. Now, I think I know why you feel it necessary to be so overbearing and unpleasant to everyone, but believe me when I tell you, as a friend, that you would find it so much easier if you just relaxed a little bit and tried being nicer, like our sister Gaitha here.
Witchcraft isn't about being an old grump and frightening people anymore. I'm telling you this as a friend.
You know what somebody, I think they say later on here, when somebody says, I'm telling you this as a friend, they're not your friend.
They are not your friend, no. I'm picking on you to make myself feel better as a friend.
Now, Granny boots them out and tells them she'll think about it. And after they leave, Letizia says that Granny isn't a nice person and needs to learn her place.
Oof. It's high time she was taken down a peg or two. That is such a horrible instinct.
Uh-huh.
One of my least favorite characteristics in people is thinking, I have to humble somebody else.
Oof, yeah.
Go to hell.
Nanny Ogg.
Go to hell, an imaginary person I just conjured up in my mind. Stop doing that.
Will they listen to you? They're an imaginary person. You can decide if they'll listen to you or not.
Well, they'll just keep doing what they do, making me mad. Paper tigers.
A hell of your own creation. Nanny Ogg leaves them and returns to Granny's place. And Granny asks if people like Earwig. And Nanny says, yeah, they do.
She married a wizard, said Granny. You can't tell me that's right.
And she says, did you see her hat pins? That's witchcraft today. All jewelry, no drawers.
At this point, I bet Granny got the cheesecake out of the fridge as they're complaining.
Nanny urges her to try and be nice. I never does anyone a bad turn if I can't do them a good one, Gaitha. You know that. I don't have to do no frills or fancy labels.
Nanny sighed. Of course it was true. Granny was an old-fashioned witch. She didn't do good for people. She did right by them. But Nanny knew that people don't always appreciate right. Like old Poppet the other day when he fell off his horse. What he wanted was a painkiller. What he needed was the few seconds of agony as Granny popped the joint back into place. The trouble was, people remembered the pain.
Granny's magic's powered by tough love.
Well, yeah. But sometimes people don't necessarily know what they need, but they know what they want.
Yeah.
So she's a force of good, even though she's a little grumpy and she's not going to be your favorite person. She's still doing the right thing.
She's like the mean teacher that taught you so much.
Exactly. Now, Nanny Og can see a look on Granny's face. It's trouble. Granny says she's never given anyone anything they didn't have coming. And Nanny Og agrees.
You had that look just before old Hoggett was found beaten black and blue in his own pigsty and wouldn't talk about it. You mean old Hoggett the wife beater or old Hoggett who won't never lift his hand to a woman no more, said Granny. The thing her lips had pursed into may have been called a smile. Mm. You know what? I do think it's Dorothy, because I remember there was a Golden Girls episode that was just like this, where there was a wife beater.
Oh, wow.
And Dorothy got him and she snapped his arm in like five places. She broke his elbow. There was blood shooting, spraying everywhere on her face. And she was just laughing. You remember that one?
I don't.
Out on the lanai.
You know, for a second.
Snapped his elbow out on the lanai.
For a second, I bought it because they did have those very special episodes of Golden Girls where things got really serious.
It's true. There probably was some sort of abuse episode at some point.
And it says here, Latisse thinks we should move with the times. Well, I moved with the times. We ought to move with the times. No one said we ought to give them a push. Granny tells Og that she'll see her later, and Nanny Og scurries off. That night in bed, Nanny Og knows Granny will be plotting something dreadful.
About Nanny, it says, she herself didn't like winning things. Winning was a habit that was hard to break and brought you a dangerous status that was hard to defend. You'd walk uneasily through life, always on the lookout for the next girl with a better broomstick and a quicker hand on the frog. I like that, though. That's true.
So the next day, Granny Weatherwax shows up at Farmer Percy Hopcroft's farm. Percy's knees begin to tremble and his wig started to slide off the back of his head to the hoped-for security of the floor. Such good stuff. She smiles and says that it's nice what he did, naming those apples after Nanny Og. People don't pay her enough respect. So to thank him, she gives him a little vial of hair tonic that will help him grow his hair back. And he is terrified of her. They're like, what is this about? Granny Weatherwax is never nice. It's all so creepy. And he doesn't want to use the tonic, but he's afraid that she'll be angry if he doesn't use the tonic. And he and his wife decide that they're going to try it out on the dog.
I get it. Somebody who is relentlessly dour suddenly becoming nice is horrifying. All of these scenes are really funny. They just don't. The other shoe never drops and it scares the hell out of them.
Next, she goes to Farmer William Porchicks and is nice to him as well. She says good morning to him. This scares him. She says a blessing on his best milking cow. And this totally freaks him out.
He's so unsettled by the encounter that he squirts milk right into his boot instead of the pail.
He yells out to his son to come to him.
What's up, Dad? You take Daphne down to the market right now, understand? What? What? But she's our best milker, Dad. Was, son, was. Granny Weatherwax just put a curse on her. Sell her now before her horns drop off. What'd she say, Dad? She said, long may she continue to give milk. Porchick hesitated. Doesn't sound awfully like a curse, Dad, said Rummage. I mean, not like your general curse. Sounds a bit hopeful, really, said his son. Well, it was the way she said it. What sort of way, Dad? Well, like, cheerfully. You all right, Dad? It was the way. Porchick paused. Well, it's not right, he continued. It's not right. She's got no right to go around being cheerful at people. She's never cheerful. And my boot is full of milk.
Ends with a big laugh, boot full of milk.
In that last bit, there's like three things that made me laugh out loud. It's so good. I can't believe that it's taken us this long to jump on the Pratchett train.
Well, what's funny is that the kid's giving him a little pushback. She's our best milker. Yeah. And the way he says, well, it sounds kind of
hopeful.
You know, sounds kind of hopeful, really. He's not just being a foil. He's offering up some. Yeah, it's very funny stuff. And yeah, I'm glad we're finally covering this. We're going to get to the second half of the story next week. We haven't decided yet. We have two stories on tap to end the month with. Another one is a Pratchett story. The other one was an H.G. Wells story. We haven't decided which one we're going to do yet. So let's just see how this plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Then if we do the other one at the end of the month, then we're going to go right into all 41 novels. No, we're not going to do that. I want to thank Rachel Lackey for being our reader today.
Oh, yeah. She's phenomenal. And please check us out on Rachel Watches Star Trek if you haven't given it a go. It's a fun show. Me and my wife talk about Star Trek. She used to be a novice, but now she's well into Star Trek, so she knows way more about Star Trek than she ever wanted to. That's fun.
I also want to thank some patrons.
Yeah, let's start off by thanking Tom Mullen.
I want to thank Timothy Clinton.
Kim Arne Larson, thank you.
Christina Mardal, thank you so much.
I want to thank Patrick Myers.
I want to thank Trev Goldring.
Luke Jones, thank you.
Kyle Stuck, thank you.
Jason Denon, thank you so much.
Mats Sjoberg, thank you.
Paul Moody, thank you so much.
Dustin Kerner, thank you.
I'd like to thank Sio Clesius.
Brian, thank you.
And lastly, Matt Coles, thank you so much.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much for continuing to support this show. I hope you're enjoying these Terry Pratchett episodes. We'll be back with more of The Sea and Little Fishes. You know, why is it called that?
I'm not sure.
Well, we're going to have to figure that out next time. Please tune in for that. For now, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories.